This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We turn now to the Cincinnati Fringe Festival. This is an annual two-week celebration of creative and alternative presentations of theater and other art forms. The pandemic forced it to the internet this year. But as they say, the show must go on. And Andrew Hungerford is the producing artistic director of No Theater and joins us on the phone. Andrew, thanks for chatting with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Michael.
It's our pleasure to have you. I guess if there were ever an arts event that was well-equipped to adjust in a period of weirdness, it's Fringe.
It's true. We've faced a number of different challenges going into this year's festival. One is just the perspective of theater as a whole. When we're an art form that's dedicated to bringing people together in small spaces, how do we adjust to that at a time when that's not really a good idea, epidemiologically speaking? So we pivoted to be able to offer shows online this year. We're a curated Fringe Festival, which means that we have a jury of a couple of dozen artists and theater makers around Cincinnati who review all the applications that come in from around the country and all over the world, frankly. And so our first step was to reach out to people who've been accepted to the Fringe and ask them a couple of questions. One, do you want to proceed with the festival in an online form? Two, would you rather defer your acceptance to next year? Three, do you not want to participate and suss things out as things move along? And then if you do want to participate, is your show available in digital form? Or is there another show that you've created that could be available in digital form that we could offer to audiences? So with all that together, we've rolled out programming of 20 shows in what we consider our primary lineup, which includes around 14 brand new shows to the Cincinnati Fringe audiences this year, and then six what we're calling Fringe Flashbacks, which are shows that had great success in Fringe's past that now audiences can revisit. And then we also have a series of live streaming special events, and we're continuing one of the hallmarks of our Fringe Festival is that every night at the end of programming, we all get together for a big party back at No Theater that has a different theme each night. So we've been trying to continue the spirit of that through live stream programming each night.
Andrew, one of the key components of a Fringe Festival is that there's so much going on all in the same period of time. And I know that big fans that participate in this every year love to accumulate as many tickets as they can, to see as many different things as they can, and to cast a very informed vote on, like, the audience picks and those types of things, right, that happen at the end. How is it working this year? Is there a schedule? Are people buying tickets where they just log on and watch what they want when they want? Is it more on demand?
Yeah, so we have a combination of things. Nearly all of the programming is offered video on demand, but because that community watching portion is such an important part of the festival, we've released a schedule that has what we call the kinda weird watches, where people can, each show in the festival has a scheduled time that we can all watch it together. And then after those show times, we're offering live stream talkbacks with the artists so that people can, audiences can engage with the show. And then immediately after see, some really interesting details about how the artist put it together and ask questions via social media that can be answered live. And so we have a number of people. We're offering, again, a Fringe All Access Pass, essentially, which gets digital audiences access to every show in the festival that they can watch either according to our scheduled time or at their leisure.
And we're talking with Andrew Hungerford. He's the producing artistic director at No Theater, which puts on the annual Fringe Festival here in Cincinnati. It's its 17th year and probably its weirdest year yet since it's not live and in person. It is all online. What is the, I guess, I don't want to say quality of the videos, but I mean, you know, you're talking about creating a piece of theater in a lot of cases here and then shifting to some type of cinema, really. And what has that process been like for the artists involved, translating what was supposed to be presented in one medium, now doing so in another?
Yeah, it's been really interesting because I think we all realize as theater makers that we're not strictly filmmakers. So we're using cameras, I think, and I say we as a collective because we're all trying to figure this out in the theater. using cameras in a way that film traditionally would not. Or exploring different ways of telling the same story. So we have one local creator who, instead of doing a live Zoom video or something like that, has animated his whole show. We have another local creator who was going to do a lot with puppets and so substituted a different show that was more effective in this particular medium. And then we have there's an out-of-town group that's part of our Fringe Flashback series that was touring a show I believe, New Zealand when quarantine hit. So they were able to film about half of it in the theater and then recreated the second half through video at a distance once they got back.
Oh, wow.
So it's a really interesting and compelling way to that artists are engaging with video in a different way. And then we've got some dance pieces that utilize much larger spaces, including a piece by a local dance company, Pones Inc., their show Proximity, which was filmed in quarantine at locations all around Cincinnati, exploring the space between people and what it means to be in a city when you can't be in and around the people of that city. I think we've got some really interesting and compelling work, some of which was conceived before the coronavirus and then sort of adapted for format, and some of which was directly inspired and influenced by the times we're living in.
Well, Andrew, theaters had to shut productions down. I'm not sure if No had a show on stage when these closures started. Did you have to shut something down that was in progress?
We did. We had to. We were running the National New Play Network rolling world premiere of Alabaster, which we had to stop in the middle of the run. Now, fortunately, we were able to get permission to put a live streaming version of that up. We did a very rapid 3-camera shoot and edited it together in a matter of days and got it up online. And so because we were able to sell tickets to the digital version, we actually ended up breaking our box office goal for the full production, though we had to cancel live performances in the middle of it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because that was really what my next question is, I mean, how have audience responded to this new delivery of something that they'd grown accustomed to seeing in a certain way?
Yeah, there are a number of challenges associated with it. So something like Alabaster, we had really good success with, in part because we had the drive of the ongoing performance and a playwright who was very committed to making sure her work got seen as part of this national conversation. For the Fringe, we had no metrics to predict how this would perform and how audiences would roll out. So we had, as we rapidly revised our budget, we had very conservative sales estimates for what we would do on this Fringe. But I can say that we've sold over 70 all-access passes, which is great. And we currently have over 1,400 views of Fringe-related content online, so that's also great. And that's not the Facebook metric of 2-second views. That's like a viewing. We've already exceeded our box office goal that we made as our emergency contingency. Now, it's still a far cry from what we would make for an in-person Fringe, but we are cautiously optimistic.
Well, I guess that's a better position to be in than some of the alternatives. So glad to hear that as well. And so the Fringe opened last Friday. It runs through next Saturday, June 13th. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, I actually performed in the first two Cincinnati Fringe festivals, and this was so long ago that this was back when No Theater was at Gabriel's Corner, right? At Sycamore and Liberty, and now you've got that beautiful space on Jackson Street. And this event has evolved so much over this period of time that, it's a pretty big deal now, isn't it? You get people from all over the place who now want to be part of this. I recall the early days, it was mostly locals, and it's completely expanded.
It has, and it's such a great and supportive event for both Cincinnati's community and bringing in connections with artists from, again, all over the world. It's something that I am really proud to be a part of. I, too, performed in one of the early Fringes before I was associated with No Theater back in 2006, just after the No had moved into our building on Jackson Street. It was a show I wrote. We performed in the stairwell. It was very fringy. But there's something about the community aspect of the festival and just the camaraderie that's built up in Cincinnati in particular that is really meaningful to me, and I think to all of the people in our community. So that's part of why, when faced with the coronavirus, canceling wasn't an option. It was, how do we continue to build this to support all of the artists and community members who count on this being an annual event every year? And now the challenge is just, how do we continue to get the word out, to get to bring more audiences in and share the work of these artists with as many people as possible?
And we're talking with Andrew Hungerford, producing artistic director at No Theater, about the digital Cincinnati Fringe of 2020, having to adjust during the coronavirus pandemic. Let's talk theater in general. When do you expect that we'll be back in that space on Jackson Street watching a no show?
Well, we're as with many theaters, we had programmed a number of different contingency plans. And so the way that we're looking to move forward is releasing a season that is primarily a digital season and not planning to be back in the space live until March of 2021. And we're doing this for a number of reasons. One, for the safety of our audiences and our artists and making sure that we're able to produce work in a way that keeps everyone healthy, but still helps us maintain our mission of uplifting underserved voices and reaching a diverse set of communities. I think these two crises, the crisis of the pandemic, really awakened a lot of theaters to really have a moment to think and look at our institutions and institutional problems across American theater writ large, and how can we use this as a moment to not back away or shut down, but reinvent ourselves and reinvest in economic equality and justice and raising up diverse voices and making sure that everyone's perspective is heard. And then I think the current ongoing protests across the country really have shown a light on inherent problems, again, in institutional American theater, where black artists and black voices are not heard and uplifted, and forcing institutional theater to confront the white supremacy inherent in the country as a whole, and to challenge ourselves to correct that.
And certainly No Theater has been known for the type of programming that facilitates those conversations really since its inception. And Andrew, we've got about a minute left, and I guess I just want to know how, I mean, it's tough to make a living in the arts in Cincinnati, but some people are able to do it. And I'm wondering if that's threatened at all by what's happening right now.
I think in some ways it is, but we honestly are just doubling down on economic equality at this point. And in our proposed budget for the coming year, we're committing to making sure artists and staff members across the board make $15 an hour, including myself, which will be delightful. But so I think it is threatened, but I think it's a matter of institutional will to make it possible for artists to live and thrive in our city.
You can find out more about the Digital Fringe, Cincy Fringe, at CINCY Fringe, FRINGE.com, or check out notheater.com. That's KNOW Theater, RE.com. And this is all very complicated now that I'm saying it out loud, so I apologize for that. But Google Cincinnati Fringe, and you'll find where you need to be. And we've also got a link at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. This thing runs through June 13th, so there's still time to take in this very unique piece of theater. Andrew Hungerford is the producing artistic director at No Theater. Andrew, thanks so much for the conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Michael.
And we want to let you know that we were not able to connect with the guest that we promoted at the top of the show, where we were going to talk a little bit about these ideas that a few organizations here in the city have for what they call a path to justice, based on what we're seeing in the streets of Cincinnati and elsewhere. But there is a news conference at 5:30. WVXU reporter Tana Weingartner will be there, and we'll bring you that story on air at 91.7 FM and also online at WVXU.org. And we will have our news review on Friday, so Maybe we'll be able to discuss it then. And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of our show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme song is composed by Rob Fetters. And you can find all of the archives of every episode we've ever done at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.